From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, March 24th, 2025.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 25 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath. Open 7 days a week.
Governor Janet Mills says the Trump administration needs to do more to protect the health and economic security of women and girls. The governor's comments came 2 days after the president once again called her out over the issue of transgender athletes in women's sports and demanded that she apologize to him. Kevin Miller has more.
Trump posted on Truth Social over the weekend that he wanted a, quote, full-throated apology from Mills before his administration would settle its month-long dispute with Maine over transgender athletes. Instead, Maine's Democratic governor responded Monday with a stinging critique of the Trump administration's economic performance and its policies towards women.
If the current occupant of the White House wants to protect women and girls, he should start by protecting the women and teenage girls who are suffering miscarriages and dying because they can't get basic life-saving health care in states across this country.
Mills has been relatively quiet since Trump publicly confronted her during a White House governor's meeting last month. That was when he warned that Maine must comply with his executive order banning athletes from women's sports or else.
We are the federal law. Well, you better do it. You better do it because you're not going to get any federal funding at all if you don't.
Mills' response that day, see you in court, made national headlines. But it also sparked a wave of investigations and sanctions targeting Maine. The governor steered clear of the transgender policy on Monday and instead described the battle with the White House as being about, quote, states' rights. Mills also went after Trump on the economy, saying he offered no plans other than tariffs on Canada that will also hurt Maine. And she said potential cuts to Social Security offices and the elimination of USAID programs would impact women and girls.
If he cares about women and girls, he should talk about the little girls and boys and infants in Sudan and other countries who are dying right now because he has cut off their supply of food and life-saving medicines. If he truly cares about women and girls and the people of this country, let's see the economic plan. Let's see the health care plan.
Two federal agencies have given the Mills administration until later this week to agree to reverse state policy allowing high school athletes to compete in sports based on their gender identity. The Trump administration has said that failure to comply could result in the matter being referred to the Department of Justice. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
The mother of a 17-year-old boy from Lewiston detained by the U.S. Border Patrol last month says her son remains in federal custody in New York. The case has confused immigration lawyers who say it's unclear why Jose Adalberto Herrera is being processed as an unaccompanied minor, even though he was living with his family. Ari Snyder reports.
Liseth Herrera says Jose, the eldest of four, is a playful older brother, a bit of a jokester, and a devoted fan of the Spanish soccer team Real Madrid. Herrera says Jose was excited leaving the house for his first day of work on a construction project with his uncle because he'd start making money to help the family cover rent, food, and other expenses. But she says the excitement soon turned to fear when Jose called to say the police had pulled them over on the way to work and that his uncle was being arrested.
Entonces mi hijo se puso a llorar y me decía, mami, están golpeando a mi tío.
My son started to cry and told me that they were hitting his uncle, Herrera remembers. Then she says a police officer told him to hang up the phone. Later that morning, Herrera says she received a call from a man who identified himself as an immigration agent, saying they had Jose in custody and had no record of him in the immigration system.
Okay, so este es el situación.
Herrera recorded part of that phone call.
Tu hijo va a ser deportado a El Salvador, probablemente. Okay?
Your son, the agent says, is probably going to be deported to El Salvador.
Si usted desea, puede entregarse y ser deportado con él, pero él será deportado de todas maneras.
If you want, the agent continues, you can turn yourself in and be deported with him, but he is going to be deported either way.
Me sentía angustiada, desesperada, porque ¿qué podía hacer?
I felt anxious, desperate, because what could I do, Herrera says. Kira Gagarin, an immigration lawyer assisting the family, says she'd spoken with the Border Patrol after Jose's detention, but she says she wasn't aware of the threat of deportation to El Salvador.
Did he say that on the call? That's so crazy. No, I don't agree with that assessment.
Gagarin says Jose is currently being held in the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, and she expects he'll be processed and released back to his family.
So, I mean, that's very unfortunate that Border Patrol would be intimidating his mother and telling her that he's likely to be imminently deported.
Jose's mother says he entered the country 6 years ago as an unaccompanied minor, was processed by the federal government and reunited with the family, who'd arrived earlier and who are still waiting for a court date to present their immigration case. Gagarin says the government never filed the paperwork to schedule a court date for Jose, leaving him in a sort of legal limbo.
So no, we don't really know why it's not filed. I always kind of half-jokingly say that the government processes, I don't know, 1,000 people a week, and sometimes cases just get stuck in a corner with no one ever getting to them or looking at them.
Still, she says that doesn't explain why Jose was sent back to the Office of Refugee Resettlement to be processed as an unaccompanied minor instead of being released to his family.
I've been doing this for 12 years, and I've never seen children detained for no reason and reprocessed by the Office of Refugee Resettlement.
Meanwhile, the Portland-based Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project is calling the detention, quote, extremely unusual, if not unprecedented, and characterizes the action as family separation in another form. Border Patrol did not respond to a request for comment by airtime. The Office of Refugee Resettlement said in a statement it does not comment on specific cases. Meanwhile, Jose's mother says he is allowed 10 minutes a day to call home. She says she tries to cheer him up, but it doesn't always work.
Está de angustiado, está desesperado, está frustrado, no duerme.
He's stressed, desperate, frustrated. He's not sleeping, Herrera says. Herrera and her three younger children, meanwhile, are at home, afraid to go outside. She says she prays to God every day to help her son and also has a message for the president.
Quiero decirle que nosotros venimos a este país. No venimos a hacerle daño a nadie. Venimos a trabajar para un futuro mejor para nuestros hijos.
I want to tell him we didn't come to this country to hurt anyone, she says. We came to work for a better future for our children. This situation, she says, is breaking our soul. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Maine General Health in Augusta plans to lay off 100 full-time equivalent positions in mid-April. President and CEO Nathan Howell says, like other hospitals across the state, Maine General is on a tenuous financial footing due to rising business costs, reimbursement rates that don't cover the cost of care, and excessive denials, especially from Medicare Advantage plans. In a written statement, Howell says those issues are compounded by the Maine care crisis. Because the state legislature failed to pass a supplemental budget with a two-thirds majority to plug a $118 million deficit in Maine care, hospital payments have been reduced. Howell says Maine General is taking a hit of roughly $600,000 a week. To help mitigate losses, he says Maine General is freezing spending where possible and leaving certain positions unfilled. The announcement of the layoffs comes a little more than a week after Northern Light announced it will close Inland Hospital in Waterville this spring due to financial challenges. Healthcare advocates are urging Maine's congressional delegation to push back against Republican proposals that would make changes to the Affordable Care Act and cut billions in funding from Medicaid. Ann Woolison, the executive director of Consumers for Affordable Healthcare, says more than 100,000 Mainers have access to health coverage because of Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. She says when people are uninsured, they often delay care, which can require expensive treatments down the road.
What does that mean for everybody else who's paying for health insurance, including our businesses, state employee programs, municipalities, our schools? It means that everybody, including businesses, pay more for commercial health insurance to make up for the cost of providing health care to everybody else who doesn't have health insurance.
Olison says Medicaid coverage also helps support healthcare infrastructure, such as hospitals and clinics. Advocates for expanding involuntary psychiatric treatment programs are making another push to convince the Mills administration to apply for a waiver that would unlock federal funding. Steve Missler has more.
If successful, the push to release more federal Medicaid funds for compulsory psychiatric treatment would join Maine with more than a dozen states, including Vermont and New Hampshire. The waiver would allow Medicaid to reimburse programs that provide outpatient psychiatric treatment to people who might refuse it and become a danger to themselves or others. The man who killed 18 people in the Lewiston mass shooting was one of those people, according to his sister, Nicole Herling. Herling told the legislature's Health and Human Services Committee Monday that people who are unaware of their mental illness often go untreated or cycle through hospitalizations or jail until they reach a breaking point.
While not everyone with psychosis requires hospitalization, some, like my brother, who experienced psychosis with anosognosia, do, for their own safety and the safety of others. We cannot wait for another tragedy to unite us.
Medicaid caps reimbursement dollars to providers with more than 16 beds to discourage the forced treatment and involuntary commitment that was prevalent decades ago. But advocates for Maine's decade-old progressive treatment program law say the funding restrictions are outdated and are backing a bill that would force the state to apply for a waiver. An official from the Maine Department of Health and Human Services told lawmakers that the Mills administration is already seeking such a waiver, although it's more limited in scope. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Maine Independent Senator Angus King is calling the Trump administration's approach to Social Security, quote, disrespectful, destructive, and dangerous. In a video statement, King said the plan to close dozens of Social Security offices and lay off thousands of workers could result in delayed or missing checks for the millions of Americans who rely on Social Security to pay for food, medicine, and rent.
And what worries me is that what we're seeing is a kind of slow motion. Actually, it's not that slow motion. It's pretty fast. Undermining of the structure of Social Security.
King's comments follow recent remarks from Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick that only fraudsters would complain about missed Social Security checks. After a federal court issued a temporary restraining order last week, the acting commissioner of the Social Security Administration, Lee Dudick, said that employees would continue to work at the agency, and President Trump supports keeping offices open and getting the right check to the right person at the right time. A bill to exempt crystal deposits that could contain lithium from Maine's strict mining law is facing stiff opposition from environmental groups and the Mills administration. State Senator Joseph Martin, an Oxford County Republican, wants to make it easier to operate a pegmatite quarry of up to 20 acres. But Eliza Townsend of the Appalachian Mountain Club says the bill would upend carefully crafted regulations for metallic mining.
The current law wisely requires precautions to protect human and environmental health. Eliminating them would be irresponsible.
A massive lithium deposit was discovered in western Maine several years ago to allow small pegmatite mining operations that can prove they will not pollute. Bowdoin College has received the largest donation in its history for a new initiative to research artificial intelligence. Reed Hastings, the Bowdoin alum and co-founder of Netflix, has donated $50 million to the college. President Safa Zaki says as AI is progressing quickly, Bowdoin will host conversations about the best ways to utilize the technology.
It will require us to do some deep thinking about the ethical frameworks, the possibilities, the ways to leverage AI in ways that support humanity.
The funding will allow the college to hire 10 new faculty members in a variety of disciplines and support current faculty who want to incorporate AI into their research. It was a banner year for Maine Maple Sunday weekend, which drew record-breaking crowds at sugar houses across the state. Molly N. King reports.
It's an important weekend for sugar houses, which can make up about 50% of their yearly income over a single weekend. Maple Producers Association President Alan Green said his farm and others saw record crowds, and in some cases, despite prepping for above-average sales, they started running out of product.
About 1 o'clock Sunday, I actually started taking syrup from the evaporator. We were pumping it over through the filter and directly into a finishing rig. And I had a crew packing syrup all afternoon and selling jugs of syrup that were 180 degrees, and people were walking out of here as fast as we could pack them.
The weekend's success comes as a relief for some maple producers. Last year, due to an ice storm, the weekend had such low turnout that farmers had to give away or donate unsold perishable products. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, the history of conservation in Maine's North Woods. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.